too. Yeah.
All right. And with
Carol
that,
Wayne.
Chair
Ready to
O'Brien,
play.
it is 6:30,
Once
so at
again,
your
yeah.
discretion.
All right. We'll call the meeting to order.
Yeah.
So, do roll call there, bro. Fuck.
Sure, Babette
Yeah.
Patton
Get back. Get back.
is present.
Get it out.
Christina Dancy,
All right.
here.
One, two, first.
Can you all, somebody, can you all mute? We have
I think
some
that's
background
Byron.
noise. Okay, so Babette Patton is here. Christina Dancy is here. Byron Price is here. He just muted. Cynthia Martin
Here.
and Monica Stewart may be joining us shortly. Margaret Holly
Present.
and Chair Brendan O'Brien.
Yeah.
All right, we have a quorum.
All right. Thanks for coming, everybody. That's great. Moving on, we've got the minutes from both, I guess, April 3rd and July 17th. Everybody get to look at those in the packet.
Yes.
All right. Any discussion or questions? All right. Does anybody want to make a motion to approve?
Make a Actually, if there's no discussion or changes, you can parliamentary declare them accepted as presented.
Well, we always vote on ours, so I think
Okay.
that I don't want to break our pattern. So let's
Okay.
not, yeah, deviate on that. So,
If it ain't broke, let's not fix it. So let's just keep doing what we're doing. If anybody
just
wants to make a motion.
make a motion to approve the minutes from July. And what was it? It wasn't it two or was it just July?
April 3rd,
April and
and
July.
July 17th.
There's a second.
I'll second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, moving on. Public comments, Brooke, do we have any public comments?
We did not receive any public comments, and right now the only attendees that we have are those that are already scheduled to speak, so I will say no public comments.
Makes it easy. All right, moving on to the mayor's comments, Mayor Crow.
Not much to report, but happy to answer any questions that anyone has. I think if you've driven down Kingsland lately, you will notice that the hotel, the True Hotel, is starting some activity there with some underground utility work that has to be done as they get ready to start construction on the new True Hotel in the Loop. And I think probably most, if not all of you, know that we have had a bit of spirited debate on the 10 acres that are part of the Jewish cemetery up off of Canton. And honestly, what I would say to everybody here, if you get a chance sometime, shoot me an email, shoot me a text, shoot me a telephone call. I honestly would like to hear what everybody has to say. I mean, because you don't get too often, you don't get 10 acres of undeveloped land that is available for development. It doesn't mean it needs to be developed. I will say that I don't believe the city has any interest in buying it and creating another park. Let me just say that one to save everybody a little bit of time, unless my colleagues surprise me. That's probably not in the cards, but I really would like to hear from you and from anybody else who would like to share their thoughts about that 10-acre site, because it kind of is an intriguing situation that there are pros and cons on both sides of that. So with that, I am more than happy to answer any questions that anybody has about anything going on in the city. Otherwise, I know we've got a couple of folks that are going to take a little while probably for their presentations.
Gary, was there more than one developer interested in that property?
The one that is currently before us, I think, is maybe developer number three. And each one of them, it has come down to the probably, for lack of a better, the density. The first ones were knocked out pretty quickly because of the density they wanted to put in, and we weren't ready for that type of density, and they weren't ready to accept less. This one, by the way, is probably the closest we've gotten to what would probably be acceptable, but that doesn't mean it's acceptable to everybody. That's why I really am kind of fishing around on this one because I'm not sure what is the best answer here. I'm really not. So that's why we go through the planning process. That's why I went through green practices. And that's why there are neighborhood meetings that are continuing to go on as we speak. So,
Cool. All right. Any
yeah,
other?
I think I'm going to say.
Byron, are you talking to us? No.
No.
We can hear you now, right?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can
Byron.
hear you.
I'm just saying, I haven't talked to anybody on Mendel, but I have heard that a lot of residents were against whatever was presented. And maybe that was the first people you were talking about there. I'm not sure.
I simply read through the comments from the last meeting that was held, and I think some of the folks were from Mendel, but I think it is kind of across the board, and that's why, to me, I think we just kind of got to let everybody say their piece. The land's not going anywhere. This developer clearly may lose their patience. I think the folks who own it may get a little frustrated too, but I think this is all part of the process, and they've owned this land for a really long time, so. Us taking our time on this isn't a bad thing. It's probably a good thing. So, I'm assuming, Brenda, we can just go ahead and
Yeah,
move
I
on.
think we'll have plenty of forums to discuss that in the future. Anybody else have any questions or comments for the mayor? All right, we'll move into some old business. The UC Farmers Market update there, Brooke.
Yes, so I am going to promote Deb Henderson to panelists. If you all recall at your last meeting, we updated you that the farmers market would be relocating to Centennial Commons, and you all did a 40% increase of their annual award to provide them with additional funding. And we agreed that Deb would return this month to provide an update. So she has joined us as a panelist to provide you all with a brief update on the activities of the farmers market.
Good afternoon or evening, everyone. It's good to chat with you again. And I have some mixed news about the farmers market. We have a Thursday market as well as a Saturday market. And then for those of you who visited the market in the spring, the Saturday one, and were surprised at the downturn in traffic from the old location, I'm pleased to report that the Saturday market has seen a steady increase in market goer attendance. The exciting part of that is that the demographics of the new market goers are in the 30 and 40 year range, and they're parents with young children. And I think we mentioned children's activities last time. And part of our focus in marketing to take advantage of these new market goers is we put up a children's activity tent that is in the middle of the market every week. We thought parents would come to the market and then stroll in the grass and visit the fountain, but a few do that and they take their kids off, to walk around the park. But so many people just want to be right in the middle of the market. And so we have a 15-foot tent. It's dedicated for children. We just ordered two small picnic tables for the area. We have a toddler's picnic table. And even parents requested, hey, do you have any bigger picnic tables for our kids that are a little older? So those will be at the market this week or next week. So there's always some activity there. And the cool thing about that is that parents stay longer at the market. One parent sits in the activity area with the kids, even when we don't have a special event, and the other parent shops. They're coloring pages, they're drawing on the using sidewalk chalk, very simple, nothing fancy. So we want to lean into taking advantage of that organic growth with the young families. And that growth is supported in our social media. We've seen an uptick in our Instagram, which typically is used by younger generations, and not an uptick in the Facebook, which is typically these days anyway, is used more by older generations, 40, 50 and above. With some crossover, of course. Some people just check everything. But we're getting a lot more people to say, well, I discovered you on social media. And surprisingly, a lot of people have discovered us. They follow the market signs, market today, and there's an arrow, and they follow it. They're very brave, adventuresome people. They're just driving down the street and they see a sign, Farmers Market today, and they follow the arrow to the next sign and the arrow and to the next one until they arrive at the market and say, oh, we just follow the signs. So we want to make sure that those signs are well placed. And if we need to order more, we'll get them out because they have had an actual impact on people discovering the market and Heiman Park, actually. One sidebar about the park, we had people in the early part of the season visit the park and say they were driving around visiting farmers markets, specifically looking for markets that were near a playground. And they were looking for a market where they could go and relax, shop, enjoy the farmers market, but there was also a place for the kids. We're not in a location that has a playground, so in lieu of that, we have the children's activity tent. So we're looking at ways to enhance that and capitalize on that, what we call an organic growth of the market or a natural growth of the market. We've seen, as far as vendors on Saturday, a slight increase. We've been able to recruit some new food vendors that come, some steadily, some off and on. Farmers, not quite as much. So we're revamping our approach to farmers and beginning to recruit for next year. So some of our long-range marketing that we spoke about before with brochures and pamphlets, we want to have a vendor. A farmer brochure, a vendor brochure, so they come and they know what we offer. We have photos, even though we're a small market and there was a downturn in our customer base for at least a while, we still have very strong buying power among our market goers. So we have photos of met several times the orchard farmer, with stacks of empty boxes of peach boxes, he sold out of peaches. Or the mushroom grower, so empty tables with stacks of all of her empty boxes. So those things we use as marketing tools. So our more broader scoped campaign for marketing and advertising. We want to make sure we hit the ground running for next year. So we will be working on that later this season and early next year to have everything ready. We have a few interim things we'll do just to hand out to vendors or email vendors. We want to also invite vendors to do a prospective farmers to do a tour of the market. Or even pop in for a single day if they have all their permits and everything in order to experience what we have to offer and with the hope of recruiting them for the next season. So those are the things we have in play right now. The Thursday market did not fare as well, along with the delays in timing, because the city had one timing and the farmers market season had another timing. It was impacted very strongly by bad weather. We delayed the opening by 3 weeks at least. And then it was also canceled two more times because of bad weather. And then for some reason, that poor little market. And it's like the little market, the little engine that could kind of thing, was impacted by some of our vendors with illnesses and accidents, very serious car accidents, impacted by the tornado, losing their homes, some things like that. And so the vendor account, nothing to do with the market at all, dropped considerably. And then, of course, other vendors go, oh, well, where are people? And so they opted out. We ended the season with 2 to 4 vendors. And we still think it's a strong investment of our time and resources, as well as the EDRST funding. So we are hopefully, as long as the weather cooperates, we think we could hit the ground running on that Thursday market next year. I think that's it about the updates for the market. Like I mentioned, the future planning for advertising large-scale campaign in 2026, we'll be working on that. Planning over the winter, recruiting, creating brochures, et cetera. Other items, we have a meeting. We're going to be scheduling a meeting pretty soon with Brooke and the staff to go over the review of the season and go over the agreement for next year. And in that, there were some things I'll just briefly mention because we want to see if we can change because it affects funding. Was one of the line items things for funding. And one of the things is the rent being applied to the farmers market is based upon the rental of a pavilion, which is fine. It's either $50 or $100 a session, a market. But unbeknownst to us, there were also rules being applied to the farmers market. And we found out after the fact when we scheduled our first petting farm that pertained to the use of a pavilion. We're not in a pavilion, we're in a farmers market. I mean, sorry, our farmers market is in a parking lot. So some of those rules we don't think apply, but the general rules, of course, of the park should apply to us like they do to everyone. So those are the things that we will, that along with the fees being charged, we're charged fees when a market is rained out. If that's understandable, if we
Breaking
were
moments ago.
what's that?
Sorry about that.
Oh, we're being charged fees if the market is rained out and we don't use the parking lot. That's very understandable if someone rents a pavilion, an organization, and they don't show up or they say it's raining, I'm not going to use it, that they still pay for it. Because the city, the Parks Department, loses the use of that pavilion. No one else can use it. It's too late. But the parking lot is immediately used by anyone who comes to the park, staff or visitors to the park, visitors to the pool, et cetera. We don't think that we should be charged for that amount. So there are some things like that that impact some of the funding we're receiving that I mentioned them because of that. And then we'll be discussing with the Brooke and the rest of the staff. Part of that brings me to the let's see. So the fees were one thing I'm pleased to report on. We were able to bring down the fees charged for each market from about $800-$900 a month to about $400-$450 a month. We obtained a small co-working office at Tecarista to satisfy the residency requirements, not just for the Parks Department, but also in order to get an occupancy permit to get the market's business license. We need an office in University City. So that's all been taken care of, and that brings the cost we were asking from EDRST funding from $800-$900 a month down to $400-$450 a month. So I think that's a positive. That's something that that's funding we don't have to use.
Deb, I'll tell you, I'll give you a couple more minutes, but we got to be respectful of everybody's time because we got, a few more things to get to. And I know that it was mixed a mixed delivery of good and bad. But what do you think going forward? Thursday.
I think given the new customer base where we have, I think the future is very positive. And so as long as we can recruit the farmers and vendors for the next year, I feel very positive about, because younger generations are the future of not of just businesses and business districts, but also farmers markets. So I feel very positive about that.
Okay. So the request in the future, you're saying, is being halved, or it's going down?
Well, yeah, it'll go down. And there was so much uncertainty because we were still, we didn't know about all the funding. And we were working between the Parks Department, the Parks Commission, and the city staff at Brooks level, as well as the EDRST funding. And going back and forth between the different departments and commissions, there was a lot of uncertainty. We weren't sure what was going to be the final outcome. And so the estimates I gave for our funding, the estimates I gave were erred on the side of more than less. We can always come down. We can always not spend the money if we don't need it. The other things there are a couple other uncertainties that we weren't sure what we would need in terms of equipment, hard equipment, hard expenses. We had to buy generators, and we're buying picnic tables, things like that. So those were all unknowns. But as all of this gets more clear, we can consolidate, the new funding with the old, and then have something more, present something more clear next year going forward. We also learned early in this year that we can ask for funding, EDRST funding, for pretty much anything we want now. When we first applied for funding back in 2015 from the EDRST board, we were only allowed to use it for marketing and events. That's why over all these years, we applied for marketing events. And one year we applied for some other things like bigger tents. And that we made a big deal. That was an exception, and we got permission. And that's why it was different, because it was out of the scope of what we were approved for. We learned earlier this year that limitation is no longer there, and we can use the funding for other things. So that's why you saw marketing in the old request for funding, as well as the new one. And those will, I'm looking at ways to merge those two things so they're, clear up any overlap on that.
Okay. I think Brooke will keep us, in tune and abreast of that. And, we also thank you for coming and talking to us and always keeping us updated. So, that's appreciative. And, it's one of those things, you can see the funds at work when you go by the pool. We see you guys in action. So,
yeah, we got to know a lot of new people over there. And that's great. It's a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, if you got anything you need to get to us, work through Brooke, and I think we have another meeting in January. So
okay.
We'll look forward to hearing from you then.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Deb.
All right.
Yeah, moving on to the business outreach. Right, Brooke?
Yes, that is the next agenda item. And Becky is here to give you all a brief update on the business outreach that's been conducted to date.
Hi, everybody. In your memo in the packet, I outlined a little bit of what we've been doing over the past several months. We've been able to set up meetings with 13 different businesses, got a couple more interviews on the books for the next couple of weeks. And then we're going to, keep trying to set up more interviews as time allows right now. Themes are starting to emerge from those interviews on what businesses across the city are looking for. You know, we've tried to hit, you know, different sections of the city and different, you know, not just one kind of, you know, not just retail, but try to hit as many industries as we can. One of the big things that businesses would like to see is an increase in foot traffic, which is, you know, just people walking up and down the streets and coming into the businesses. There's also a large desire for several businesses to be able to network better with each other. So kind of almost what a traditional chamber of commerce would provide, you know, on that, those networking opportunities, educational opportunities, even just ways for the businesses to support each other back and forth. There's been a little bit of an issue, particularly people on the loop, and I can't confirm, I haven't been able to confirm this, but you know, some businesses have said that the spaces are remaining vacant because the rent is too high, and landlords aren't willing to budge on that. Another thing that they're saying is safety is a concern, or at least the perception of safety. So, you know, they want to be, they said they themselves would like to feel safe walking to their vehicles late at night, and customers, when they come in, they want to feel safe too as they walk up and down the streets during, you know, all times of day and stuff. So, you know, if there's ways to increase that feeling of safety, they would really appreciate that. The loop, some of the businesses have said that needs, you know, just a little bit of infrastructure updates and branding updates. This idea of like really kind of telling the city's story, like what is the city story, and marketing the city, and using that story. So, you know, there's some grants and funding ideas that can kind of start, we can start rolling out or putting together anyway. You know, there's commercial renovation grants for interior spaces that would, you know, help kind of get spaces ready for tenants to come in and maybe help reduce some of that tenant build out. Grants to help businesses modernize and transition some of their older equipment and spaces into higher efficient, energy efficient equipment and spaces, because that's an expensive undertaking, but you know, that could be really beneficial on a bottom line for a business. You know, marketing grants to help the businesses kind of hit target some of the St. Louis specific areas, like St. Louis Magazine and things like that. Inventory grants to just kind of help them provide an inventory, or, you know, have supply on stock to be able to better serve their customers. So, staff will continue to meet with businesses. This is an ongoing relationship building effort. We're going to continue this. You know, there's really no insight. It's an ongoing thing, and I'll stand for any questions if anybody has any.
I think it's great. I think looking backwards, we used to have a chamber of commerce, and you know that there was some issues and things along the way there, but I think our city, we need one. You know,
I've heard there's a chamber of commerce, but I haven't been able to figure out what happened to it and why it
that's a whole nother Oprah.
We might have to talk separately, Chair.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that over coffee some other time. But the need for it exists for sure. Just need a good group of people to put that thing together.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Mayor.
I'll be happy to give you the history of our Chamber of Commerce anytime you'd like to talk.
I would love that. People are like, what happened to it? And I said, I don't know. It's got a website, but it's not been updated since like 2016. So
And I'll just add to Becky's report that before we leave tonight, we will be trying looking to schedule a meeting with the subcommittee that was tasked with working with us to come up with some of the grant programs. So that's Babette, Byron, and then of course you, Mayor Crow, where we'll talk a little bit more about starting to build out some of these grant programs so we can get the funding out on the streets. So we'll do that before we leave. And then Chair Christina Dancy has her hand up.
Sure.
Becky, are the grants that you're mentioning, are they grants that the city applies for, receives funding, or is it the other way around? You're giving the businesses the information to apply for the grants?
Yeah, so these grants are grants that we would build, we would create them, and then businesses could apply for them, like the facade improvement program.
Okay, so not external grants. These are the city.
Correct. Yeah, these grants would be using the EDRST funds to to get out to the businesses.
And I don't know if you were on at the point that we made that call, Christina, but, you know, one of the issues we've had is that we just had this general thing that any business could apply for anything. And we found out that was very inefficient and whatnot. So we formed the subcommittee and to discuss building out like actual grant programs with guidelines and whatnot. And the first meeting, they tasked the staff with conducting business outreach to hear what the businesses would like to see done with this money, the EDRST funds. And so Becky joined us shortly after, and you know, she and Miles hit the streets and got a little bit of feedback. So hopefully we can start building out some of those grant programs so that we can start getting this healthy fund balance that we're sitting on out there into the business community. And then Chair Peggy has her hand up now.
Yeah, Ms.
I don't know if you can see those. So
I focused on purpose or not, but yes. Go
okay.
Ahead.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So today, you know, having looked at the package, I went back and looked, you know, and hearing what Becky's talking about and what Deb was talking about in terms of signage, I'd gone back and looked at the comprehensive plan that the city council approved in January of last year. And I found a couple of items specific to this body that may be related. So there was, you know, when we talk about foot traffic, one of the items was to create walking tours of U City focused on the city's history. And so if you structure a walking tour, you guarantee foot traffic. The other thing was very specifically to implement a signage program to highlight the city and its neighborhoods. So, you know, again, back to what Deb was talking about, how signage is helping, you know, if looking at those two items, it would seem that the city has asked us to put as a body to help put together, take on some of those initiatives.
Back, I think a few years ago, this board in particular, I think, helped the Chamber of Commerce actually identify sections of Olive as the industrial international district. And there was a lot of kind of wayfinding or, you know, thought given to that. But absolutely, I think you're 100% right. I think somebody should take that effort up. And they're tasking us or telling us to try to figure
it's in the plan.
Yeah, 100%.
Along with another of other items like reference to the International District on Olive, you know, back to the economic development plan. So it seems that, you know, we're chartered to go do something about it.
Well, I'm not sure
how we do that.
Big picture, I think staffing at the city, you know, working hand in hand with us and this board and the parameters and all that, it's always been tough, right? Because there's turnover, there's coming and going, there's different administrations, there's all that. But I mean, I'll tell you, I feel very good about the folks in place now, and they're really trying to, you know, make best efforts to grow this. And I think that's great. You know, we've had a lot of piecemeal approaches, and this seems like, you know, Becky and Brooke are taking it pretty seriously and meeting with the business owners. That's awesome. So keep going.
Thank you.
Moving on, I think, right? Do we have anything else as far as the next planning or outreach update? Is that it?
Yes, just at the end of this meeting, again, I'll want to try and schedule a subcommittee meeting with Babette Byron and the mayor to start discussing, building out some of these grant programs.
Okay. So I guess we have two new requests for funding for fiscal year 26. The first is the U City Police Department.
Yes. So, even though we had not opened applications, these were two requests that, the city manager, wanted you all to consider. So I do have Chief Hampton here to present his request. I'll give you all a brief overview. And then he can discuss further. So, the request is for $200,000 to be split between fiscal years 26 and 27, meaning the current fiscal year and the next fiscal year. The purpose would be, I know, I talked to you yesterday, Chair, and the narrative may be a bit vague. If you look at the budget form, the primary purpose would be for private security patrols, and equipment, surveillance equipment, license plate readers and whatnot, and then also some signage to help deter criminal activity. So the total request is for 200,000 across 2 years, and I'll turn it over to the chief.
Good afternoon, Mayor Crow and other members of this committee. Glad to be here tonight. I definitely want to give you a brief overview. Not going to take up too much of your time, but can you hear me well, first off? Okay, thank you. The need for this is the increased infrastructure that is coming into our commercial areas. We have now two business districts on both ends of our city. So you're talking the farthest east end as well as the farthest west end. So trying to navigate that with just routine regular patrols is always going to be a very tedious project. So understanding, partnering with our stakeholders, partnering with our business partners, partnering with our community to try to help be more vigilant, be more hardening of the target. A quick example, right now, for the last maybe 6 to 8 months, there's been a private patrol that we have partnered with. It's not the St. Louis Finest. We're not trying to charge up to that amount of need for private security, but we've utilized them to help hardening these municipal lots in the Delmar Loop area. We want to kind of grow on that project. We want to kind of grow on the technology that is out there. Right now in the Delmar Loop, I have a surveillance trailer that is the first of our kind. It was taken to the mayor and the council to speak of investing in such type of technology and devices, and that has been approved. Understanding this is just the pilot program of that to make sure we get the most advantageous out of those types of technology pieces. This request is of 200,000, and this is a 2-year project. Understanding that the super target, the largest target in the most recent area of Missouri, is coming to our community. Understanding that a new infrastructure of Dierbergs is coming to our community. Understanding that the largest Costco in this area is already in our community, along with all the other business partners that are out on the west end of Olive, not ever forgetting about the original business district of the Delmar Loop area. More family fun, family friendly, perception-wise, and we want to make sure that the criminal statistics match with people's perceptions as well. We want them to understand that we provide those details on a yearly basis, on a whenever it's needed, whenever it's requested. It's also kept online, ucitymo.org, on the police side. If any and ever you want to check out a regional area, a district, a zoning that you're in, it's available on there. I have some very, very good criminal analysts that we've procured from other places, whether that was former workers of St. Louis County, former workers of Washington University, whatever the case is, and they have helped us enhance those type of websites. What I will tell you is that This is the most immediate need. The deterrence can't be measured by signage alone, but that signage alone can't be the end piece, i.e. the technology has to be there. I'll give you an example of Dierbergs. Dierbergs, we've partnered with them. They're already investing with our partners that we have vending contracts with for some of this technology, i.e. license plate readers, i.e. the company named Flock, a very feasible company that so all of their entrances and exits onto their Dierbergs lot, they will know when a bad actor, when a carjacking suspect has moved on to that lot. We will know that because it's coming to our data pieces right away at that given time. We partner with a apartment complex out on Woodson and McKnight as well in that area, that that data, even though it's privately purchased, it comes back, it feeds back to us. Now, not every business has been willing to partake in something like that. Some businesses, let's take Costco, they have a contract with a private security firm just for their lot. That private security firm is not for 7 days a week. That might be closer to a 2 to 3 day out of a 7 day week time frame. So coupling that with our patrol efforts, but understanding our patrol efforts have to, as the infrastructure increase, even when I do these security analysis for these businesses, these business developments that come into our town, whether that's a hotel, we will be eventually getting to the point where we have business patrol districts, specifically meaning units that will not be taken out of service to go to residential calls, to go to calls at the station for prisoner releases or whatever the case is, keep the peace call in the zoning area. What this does is keep our business districts hardened, whether that's the Delmore Loop, which you often see officers on foot patrol. They do have cars that are assigned to them parked down there, but they're on foot patrol. And in the Olive Market Business District, they're mainly still in vehicles. They're not on that type of foot patrol because of the north-south of the Olive itself, the major thoroughfare of the Olive itself. The breakdown is as, like you say, project or program direct costs, implementations of LPRs. LPRs are license plate readers. They have the technology that you can also put a 360 camera with that license plate reader. So it's not just reading when a stolen car is in the area or when a bad actor or a wanted vehicle is in the area. It's also reading the color, the breakdown, the how many people are in that particular car. That alerts us, gets us into the area in a real-time factor. Now, that also gets us into the area, but let's imagine we're already in the area. That means we're on top of these bad actors that may want to cause some damage in our community. That's one piece of the request. The other is the security patrols. The security, I started off at Target as a loss prevention specialist. I started off in my criminal justice degree after my criminal justice degree, Southeast Missouri State, as a loss prevention specialist with Target. I have very good inroads with Target. I can tell you what they're going to invest in, what they're not going to invest in right off the top. And of course, policies has changed over the decades, but I can tell you that they're going to work well with University City Police Department, with the city of University City and the officials as well, and keep their targets hard with a parking garage. This is not just a store being built, but you're talking about securing a parking garage with employees' vehicles, with customers', patrons' vehicles, what have you, tourists. We're talking about right off of a highway, right off of an interstate as well. So keep that in mind. The last piece of that is the signage. You can't really measure deterrence amongst your signage, but I can tell you it makes the pulse rate go up when someone's reads that they're being, that the surveillance is in effect. There's 24-hour recording, whether or not there's live viewing, whatever the case is, that signage may be police station, substation nearby, whatever the case is, that will redirect a person's mind that may have bad actions and intended at that particular time. That's all I have, and I am open for any questions if needed.
Big yeah,
Those apples are like these security people driving around.
Miss Bryce, I couldn't hear you, sir.
That like these security people driving around.
I believe he asked if that is like security people driving around.
That is correct. That is correct. For the private security patrols, and you're coupling that with the University City Police patrols in that same area, in those same business areas, same commercial areas. So, yes, that is correct.
Kind of similar to what they do in the Central West End, right?
That is very, very similar. Very similar. There's always a hardening of business districts. I can tell you whether that's streets of St. Charles, whether that's the old towns or of any of the districts that we have. But yes, it's very similar. And I can tell you it's just going to continue to grow. And how I know it's going to continue to grow these efforts because funds and funding is being opened up from the statewide to enhance law enforcement efforts. Right now, those fundings are not in place. Those grants, those funds that can be procured by certain communities is not really for this type of purchasing and upgrading when it comes to technology right now.
So do we think Costco and Target will work together? Or no,
I do have the belief that they will work together. I can't say that they haven't worked together because they all have been dealing with the same developer group. What I can say is that their efforts are different in that aspect. That the hardening of the Target starts at home, and the security analysis. And what I mean by that is. Costco is right. They're concerned with Costco. They're not concerned with Chase Bank. They're not concerned with Royal Bank. They're not concerned with First Watch. They're concerned with Costco, their gas station, the lots, the employees, the parking, and all of which we've worked very vigilantly with this group. I can tell you, I'm in a executive board member for SLAPCA, and this is going on in many other communities as well. Whether that's let's take Ellisville, where I was first able to discover and research that Dierbergs had invested with their own technology efforts for their parking lots, and I said, okay, let's couple that, let's bring that to University City as well.
Are you seeing more crime at the markets at Olive or more crime in the Loop?
I can't give you that true breakdown. I can tell you, let me break this down. Let me pull this up real quick. Just from 23 to 24, there was a 24% decrease in violent crime, period. So those are the top eight. And that goes with auto thefts, arsons, assaults. Literally, there was a 24% decrease here in our community of those top eight categories: homicides, rapes, arsons, assaults, robberies, auto thefts. You know, all of such. So it's not that our business districts are in a plightful condition. I can tell you that oftentimes, just the perception that you know, okay, if one is too many. And specifically, we don't want that one. We want to be able to say that University City is very hardened, very proactive, and very innovative in their natures. And when we lock these people up, we want the sentencing to match, and that sends reverbs amongst the bad actors in all of the region.
Right. I guess my question is more though. I'm always pleased that crime is down. I know that Costco had an issue with the gas station for a little while, but if you kind of went around this group that's on the screen with us, I would tend to think that most of us have people tell us that they're more concerned about their safety in the Loop than they are about their safety at Costco. So my question was just more, are we starting in the Loop first and then going out west, or are we doing it both at the same time? Because it seems to me that the safety issue seems to be more heightened in the Loop than it does at Markets at Olive. But I could be wrong, and I have no data, none, to back me up.
No, what? And I understand, Mayor. Yes, we I can't say we will start in the loop, but it's a project that we wanted to take on all at the same time. We wanted to grab the bull by the horn at the same time. So the same vendors that are being used in the loop are being asked to be, and we don't have those vendors at hand. I can just tell you the same technology pieces that we want to use is being used in both places, i.e., no, not. The crime is not up in the Delmar Loop. I can tell you that. But just the perception that St. Louis City, St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department is not patrolling the East Loop. That's not a priority for their business districts. That's not one of their priorities that they, so that CVS that sits at Delmar and Skinker, that's not in University City, that often makes someone's radar, but it's not University City's jurisdiction to patrol that. We do extend just to have a deterrence purposes, and we don't allow bad actors to just hang around and do whatever, but we also are not trying to take over the patrolling efforts for the St. Louis metropolitan area.
Miss Holly, you got your hand raised.
Yes, thank you. And maybe this is a question for Mr. Mulligan. Because I'm looking at the city code and charter section 120.520, which governs the use of the special trust fund tax. And I'm just really struggling, with all due respect, Chief Hampton, these are obviously important investments, but I'm not seeing in that description of how we can spend money. I'm trying to fit this square peg in that round hole, and I'm just not seeing it. So if Mr. Mulligan or Ms. Sharp or Mr. Crow would like to explain that, I'm happy to be educated.
I'm sorry, Peggy, what did you say you were looking at?
I'm looking at the city charter.
Okay.
Section 120.520.
Well, I don't have the city charter in front of me, so I'll leave this one.
I don't have the city charter in front of me either. What we typically go off of, Peggy, is the state statute, which states that 25% goes to 25% is for admin, 20% goes to long-term, long-range planning, and then the rest has to fit certain guidelines, which this group has funding priority guidelines that it adopted in 2012 or so. So those are usually what we go by, which I don't have pulled up, so you'll have to give me a minute. And John Mulligan is on here, but not on here because he's on here for one specific topic, which is the next one. So he's logged in, but he may not. I'm going to alert him when we get to the next funding requests. And let me see, because I think I started this year off with giving you all that information.
Is the question, is this possible? Is the question, is it appropriate, or what are we getting at?
Well, what I'm looking at is what our city charter and code says we can use this money for. And I'm not seeing anything that would describe this project.
And so, the city charter, the BDRSG funds, Peggy?
That's what I don't understand. So I'm just looking for some information.
Understood. And I'm not trying to give you that answer because I don't know that code of it, but I can tell you that we were under the understanding that this can only be used in the business districts, only for the business enhancement of security and other items of that. So we never intended to utilize any of this funding for residential purposes. This is all for commercial areas here in our community and to enhance and catch up. I can tell you right now, we have a very great state cooperation when it comes to MoDOT and placement of devices of technology. It's actually more elaborate than what St. Louis County allows So between Missouri State as well as the city functions, we have quite a few of technologies in our community that are being utilized that was not here 5 to 10 years ago. I can say I can ensure that.
I think a good way to proceed, since I think Peggy brings up a great question, though, is for us to sort of check the temperature with everybody, which would be, if this is allowed, is this something you would want to spend the funds on? And it may not be allowed. And I think that's very appropriate, but mm-hmm. it'd probably be good while you've got, unless I'm missing it, Brooke, we have everybody here or pretty close?
We have everybody here.
Well, I think we lost
Stuart. We lost. Oh, look, she's Stuart. Back on the attendee side. I'm promoting her back to panda list now. But
I mean, my thought, just I think Peggy brings up a great point, and one of the things we don't ever want to do is make sure that we're sort of funding a police effort that we need to be funding by general revenues versus EDRST. So that's to me is that area we've got to be careful of. But if you are putting this on a list of things to fund to the other members, I mean, it's just kind of it's kind of more of a litmus test to see if this is something that makes sense to you.
I have generally two thoughts, and I hear Maplewood, Walmart, Sam's Club, that shopping center in particular, and I hear crime, theft all the time from people that honestly steer clear of going there. We don't want anything like that to happen at the Markets at Olive, and not like this is a silver bullet, but I think if it all checks out, if it's, you know, the statute's appropriate or whatever, I think it's a good use to have visible security out there. But, you know, that's just me.
And if I may add two things. One, I do want you all to know this request initially originated with the Loop Special Business District. They intended to submit an application in fiscal year 24. And the city manager was of the opinion that the police would be better positioned to monitor that or manage that if awarded funds. Number two, I do have the code provision up, but I do want to point out, Peggy, that it does say, but shall not be limited to. So it doesn't have to fit squarely within these five items that are listed in the statute. I would argue that if you can show that it meets or supports an economic development purpose, which would be, again, making the area safe for the people to come and frequent our businesses. I mean, we're also funding a farmer's market with these funds, which doesn't necessarily fall squarely within that those five items listed in subsection C. But yeah, I would just note that it says, but shall not be limited to. So that does give us a little bit of discretion on how we use the funds.
Well, agreed. But I mean, again, going back to the plan, and in section A, specifically for this body, it talked about utilizing impact fees as a supplemental funding source to support infrastructure improvements and public safety. And, you know, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, I don't recall there being anything when these projects were going through plan commission that indicated that there were public safety issues attached. I can go back and pull the minutes out from all of those, but I'm sure all of those projects went through all of our public safety departments. And I don't recall seeing anything about increases in funding.
Okay, I don't want to put
so the police on trial. I'm just confused.
And bat this back and forth. I think we could revisit voting on this in the future, right, Brooke? We could table it, or do you need a vote tonight?
It's completely up to you. It's at the discretion of the board. It's up for vote tonight. If you'd prefer to table it, then your options would be to schedule a special meeting or revisit it in January.
Okay. Ms. Martin, Do you have your hand raised?
Thanks, Brendan. Terry, you said something that piqued some interest on my part, and I'm a huge advocate of our police department. Thank you very much, sir. I always think that where we can find funding to support these kinds of things is important. But Terry, you said something that's interesting to me, which is this is also operating budget. Should there be monies coming from other than just us? Because we're talking about augmenting capacity, which I think would be something that would happen on an ongoing basis. So obviously these could be bridge funding in 26 and 27 and ongoing, but does the city need to look at making certain these things are considered in budget time as well? Because it does feel like operating monies and we need to make sure they've got what they need.
Yeah, I think the intriguing part of this is the fact that it's private security companies versus police probably makes it somewhat different because it really is using non-police personnel, which probably in that way probably makes sense. I think the purchasing of equipment for the readers and things, that's probably getting a little bit closer to, is this a responsibility of the cities to do? I also, though, have to flip back. By the way, I probably feel like I'm doing this. I sound like I'm doing this, and I probably am a bit, because, you know, when you're looking at the city of St. Louis, who's now trying to come up with monies to pay their police chief, because they used to have a private source for that money. Now that source can't do it. You kind of get yourself into a pickle. When I first read through this, I'd be the first to say, when I first read this, I wasn't that excited about it. But I don't think we have the concerns at Marcus at Olive that clearly that they have in Maplewood. I think, though, we have more of a perception just without data in the loop, making sure that everybody feels safe. I kind of like the idea of revisiting it soon after John gets a chance to look through it, because I'm warming up to the idea that I do think that safety is a concern for people. And I think we all know the further west you go and the further south you go, the less likely people are coming to the loop anymore. Part of it is because those of us on the screen, a large number, so probably we've aged out of the loop a little bit. Probably we're not their target market. I think we got to say that. But then you also go to the markets at Olive, which I think all of us would have to say is that every one of us, including our kids who go to school, have a vested interest in making sure that this baby hums. And it really is humming. That's a long-winded answer to let's see where the rules let us go. Really, I think that's what we need to do. And then come back to this. And if we can do it by Zoom, we probably could get a meeting pretty quickly. And I know I see Peggy's got her hand up, so I'll be quiet for a second.
Yeah, Peggy, go ahead.
Well, thank you. And so having done, I mean, not these systems, but seen some of these systems as a professional in the defense industry, maintenance of these systems, including software upgrades, is going to be a recurring bill, like every 2 years, probably for the city. And the city needs to be prepared for that, right? And this is equipment that, I mean, how often do you buy a new phone or a new tablet or a new laptop? This is equipment that is going to be obsolete very quickly. And investing in these systems is a long-term commitment, not a one-time purchase.
No, and I agree with that, Ms. Holly. I want to assure you that this is why we're not asking for millions of dollars with this aspect. I want to give a clear understanding. We have over the case, we're very saturated within our community, residential wise and school wise and parks wise. We have infrastructures out at Heman Park. We have infrastructures out at Miller Park. We have infrastructures in Eastgate Park that did not have a power sourcing. So we've partnered with these particular vendors, and those fundings have been absorbed within the police funding that is available to us, that is approved on an annual basis. I can tell you is that we're not asking for an amount that we cannot procure and secure in the in in the end of this funding. And what I mean by that is specifically, that's why this is a 2-year deployment of it. We do understand we have other avenues of different things, but we have a lot of pie to bite off with the new building, the new construction, with the radio transitions, the body cameras transition. Technology, like you said, is always ever going. So yes, we have a very elaborate collaboration with some of the companies, i.e. let's take the gunshot detection and the LPRs that are a mile radius in the Ravens and Falcons that are a mile radius in our community as we speak. And so we have partnered, and we have successfully partnered and collaborated with a lot of these vendors that we're trying to continue this partnership with.
I think, honestly, very fruitful discussion. Let's table it. And we're going to get an opinion from John and you know, revisit the charter, make sure everything is above board, and then we'll get you back on here, Chief Hampton, as whenever we can.
Here, may I ask just a quick question? Timeline wise, Chief Hampton, are we expecting implementation to go through 27 or 26 in terms of if this is approved?
The initial is 26, and the continuing of 27 is measuring the efforts, measuring the gains, measuring the wins and losses within this system. I can tell you that Dierbergs will be up in 26. Target will likely be up. I don't have the timeline in front of me, but I can tell you, though, this is what we're preparing for. We're preparing for retail theft. We're preparing for slides, and what that is an auto theft on parking lots. Whatever, we're preparing for that amount, but having to prepare with the same chess pieces that a larger chess game across from you is coming with, that is what we're trying to get enhanced.
Thank you.
Miss Marty, you got anything else?
I was just going to say, I would be very much in favor of doing this before January if we needed to have an interim meeting. I hate to put it off until January. I think it's important, especially with the holiday season and giving these guys headroom to do what they need to do.
Well, can we ask you, Brooke, to, you know, this is just kind of a pressing thing. Say, you know, by, I don't know, mid-November, maybe we get an opinion and we have a revisit meeting on this.
Sure. I will connect with, again, the city attorney probably, you know, next week or something. And I don't anticipate that it'll take him long to provide us with the legal opinion. And then I'll reach out to get a meeting scheduled with you all.
Perfect.
Okay. Yeah, this is my concern is that I agree with what the chief has brought to us. What I don't want to happen is either this body or the city council sits on this when we know this could be the biggest traffic and activity area in all of St. Louis County. And we're still running like we're still the same, because it's not the same.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Byron. Well, this by no means is going anywhere. We're going to keep finding out what we can about it. And Chief Hampton, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you all. Thank you, man.
All right. Going to – oh, he just signed off. Okay.
Moving on to the C-17 commissary.
Yes, so I am going to promote the C-17 team to panelists, and then give you all a brief background on this and then turn it over to them. So this is a proposed redevelopment project for 8201 Olive Boulevard, which was formerly Royal Bank. And the request comes from YW Hospitality Group, LLC, which is the owner of Corner 17 in the Loop. just been kind of referring to them as the C-17 team in my memo because that was easier. But the total project cost is estimated to be $7.250 million. The amount of EDRST funds requested is $438,178, which is a one-time request. I did note, if you all read the memo, that at this time, staff is not prepared to make a recommendation. The reason being, we engaged with C-17 earlier in the year. We were provided with information. We paid a consultant to review that information. Well, C-17 paid a portion. We paid the rest of it. If we got a recommendation from our consultant, and then updated numbers were submitted. We have not paid a second time for the consultant to review those. So after discussions with the city manager, we did not have a recommendation for this one at this time, because we need to see about the updated numbers. So with that said, I will turn it over to the C-17 team. We have Ivan, who is the owner. We have Bill, who is the attorney that is representing. And then I thought I moved. Oh, there he is. Okay. And then we have Peter Tao. I'm like, I thought I moved him over. So I'll turn it over to you guys.
Thanks, Brooke. I think it might be best if Ivan started and gave some of the background of C-17 and the project, if that's okay with you, Ivan.
Yes, please go ahead.
Oh, Ivan, I think he wants you to give that background.
Oh, I'm sorry, I did not hear that.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ivan.
What is it?
If you could just give a brief background of C-17 and in your history and U-City, and then talk a little bit about the project.
So our family owns Corner 17 restaurants and W Karaoke on Del Mar Loop, and then we've been on Del Mar Loop all over decades, and we both locations have been really popular in the neighborhood. In 2023, we expand our location to Washington University on campus, you know, by offering Corner 17 items to WashU students. So our project, we try to expand by providing more food throughout on campuses across St. Louis, like AMSO, SLU, and then we are also offering catering services to the community, business residents out of the commissary kitchen space, as well as produce packaged products, and hopefully we can distribute it through our local supermarkets.
Okay. So from did your team have anything else, Ivan, Bill?
Well, just to add a couple parts. It's approximately 13,000 square feet, and it's got there's some retail, but that's a lesser ancillary use. And our request is broken into two parts, where we've got a request for some streetscape improvements, and then a request for some site work related to some of the flooding issues.
So the only item that I would add to that is that the city is also considering a real property tax abatement and a sales and use tax exemption. An offer was extended. That offer was not accepted. We received a counter offer, which is being evaluated by the city manager, waiting to hear from him what next steps are. But yeah, just that's really all the information. I guess we can take any questions that you all may have between the team and then between Becky and I. Becky's been involved in this process as well, so we can answer any questions you all have.
Have you all purchased the property?
Yes, we did purchase the property already.
So you're very serious. This is going to happen.
Yeah.
And if I
Wow.
may add, this Peter Tao, or the architect. First of all, Bill, the total project is almost 17,000. The 13,000-ish is specifically the commissary part, but the whole footprint and building is about 17,000. So we have, in terms of seriousness or not, we have completed the construction drawings. They are in the hands of University City. They are probably maybe one or two items left to kind of check off the list. There was some civil engineering questions. We haven't submitted yet to the Department of Health, but the building department has run through it. The fire department has approved. MSD has given their sign off. You still have to give them the formal submission. And so that is where the project stands.
As someone who eats at Corner 17 regularly, just even last week, I do love the food and love the place. I guess I have two comments and or questions that you guys can reply to in any way you want to. Number one, as old as I am and being on city council as long as I am, this is by far, I think, the largest request we have ever received in the history of the EDRST board. So to our applicants, I want to make sure you hear that from me. This is the largest request ever. And unless my math skills are wrong, between what you're asking EDRST to do and what you're wanting the city to do with the abatements, you're asking us to basically lop off at least 10% of the cost of this deal.
Mayor Crow, that's correct. There's with the sales tax exemption and the real estate tax abatement, that nets out to under 300,000, and then there's this component, which is 430,000. So it is
And
approximately 10%.
again, I'm just going to say we've never had a request remotely of this size.
I think we have. We've had one or two, but they were specific for the window manufacturer and something else, but
The window manufacturer was a $250,000 loan or grant for their factory, which they never took, as I recall. So I guess my point in all of this is, shouldn't we wait to see what the consultant tells us is really necessary for the project? I mean, you guys applied to the city. We gave you what we thought was a decent deal. You guys said no, and now you've come a different way to come to the EDRST, and we've got different numbers coming to us now at the city. I mean, there's no way in this. I mean, I hate to say this, but I kind of am the left hand and the right hand here, and the left hand and the right hand would like the left hand and the right hand to talk together because. 700 and some thousand dollars in city funds for this project seems like an awful lot to me. And since most of the people on this border are taxpayers, I think we'd all have to say that's an awful lot of money. And in my case, I'd like to see what John Ferry says is fair and appropriate for this deal on the tax abatement before EDRST funds are then awarded out because I think that the tax deal with the city needs to be clear. Because I think the folks sitting here otherwise are doing this in a vacuum, and I don't think that's probably what anyone would enjoy doing. You've got so that's I don't mean to be well, I maybe am the bearer here of this message, but the EDRST funds that's funds that go out and never come back. And the abatement, I think we would want to know what the abatement's going to do, what the agreement is with you guys on that before the EDRST pops out money.
it's definitely the biggest ask. And I think the other side of it is we've never had a developer take on a project, especially in the floodplain, and try to activate it, right? And that we've wanted to cheer that kind of development on Olive for years. So, kudos to you all on that front. But yeah, I think we don't have enough information, and it's hard for us to move something forward when we rely on the city, the employees of the city, to tell us, hey, here's all the cards on the table, and we don't really have all the cards right now. So
May I ask the applicant, are you planning on working with the city on the abatement issue with the consultant, or do you have any ideas on that, or is that a dead deal?
Bill, you want to go ahead to say it?
Yeah, on the abatement, we did make a counter proposal, and I believe that's under consideration by the city. So that's, yeah, we are pursuing that, and we wouldn't expect, you know, the city to make a decision on that until it knows sort of the full scope of what's being requested.
And I do have to agree with Brendan. I agree that this is a gutsy move on your part, and I respect it. I really do. And Brendan, I apologize, but I think Peggy's got her hand up, and I keep forgetting to look for the hand in the corner.
I'm sorry, Peggy. Go ahead.
That's all right. Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I couldn't agree more about what the tax abatement impact is going to be, and really looking at this total package from the city. Just looking at, you know, the job creation, you know, the statements by the applicants, these are compared to the average wages in you for residents of U City. These are not necessarily high paying jobs.
Well, I have to say, if you work in a restaurant, you're not looking to high paying jobs. I think this is a pretty standard. Plus, we don't really know how the market is going to turn out a year later. This is a big project. Why do I choose U City? Because we've been in the U City for too long. We do not want to, U City is always our first option, priority, choices to choose when it comes to investment. Olive, that place has been there for a long time, and nobody, as you guys know, it's a floodway. Part of the property is in the floodway. You cannot do anything about it. I mean, if we're not gonna do it, somebody else is not gonna do it. So somebody has to come in to do it.
And my second point was going to be about exactly that, because if you, I don't know if the Stormwater Commission has looked at this, but if you elevate, and I think what I read in the package is you're planning to elevate this property, that could well exacerbate the flooding for the rest of the neighbors in the area. And the stormwater folks probably ought to take a look at this if they haven't already.
This has been reviewed. So the proposal to raise, it's not the entirety of the floodplain site. It's where it's the footprint and a little bit in front of the building. But that has all gone before through the civil engineer to MSD to work out the numbers and assessment. So it has been reviewed.
Christina, go ahead.
I have two questions. The first, will this development still happen if the EDRST funds are not dispersed or we don't approve your request? And then two, and we'll answer that question. And I think my next question is for the rest of the board.
We have a backup plan because the commissary kitchen has to go no matter what. If it's not going to work out in that place, and if it's cost too much money on our end, it might not be a good option for us. I mean, even though we purchased the land already, but putting more money into it, I don't know if it's worth it if we don't get the enough support from Hughes City. I don't know.
Thank you. And then for the rest of the board, I'm curious, in the past, have we funded developers projects? I think I've heard more about existing businesses, but a new developer developing a project. Have we funded those in the past?
think this is my 9th or 10th year. I can't remember any, honestly.
I've been here 4, and I can't. We have not in the 4 that I've been here.
But intriguingly, I'm kind of up there with Brendan on this as far as how many years. But I don't know that anyone's asked either. I mean, kind of in all fairness on that one, I really do think that this is one where I think all of us would like to help in some way. I think we just have to know the numbers before we do it. And it sounds to me like we're going to be having a meeting coming up soon anyway, regarding the last issue. And so I'm assuming that length of time may be enough time for then the applicant and the city to have reached some level of agreement on what abatement is being requested and what abatement the city is willing to give. So,
Brooke, can we add to our next meeting that we talk about what if we open this door for developers to also be able to request funds? Maybe they didn't know, and maybe that's why we didn't have them. What does that mean, to Terry's point, that they're getting abatements and all these other things and they're coming to us? Do we want to continue that? What are our rules, or just level set and understanding about how we're going to work with developers, because they're going to come if we approve this project?
Well, if I may add, just so that you aren't comparing it just apples to apples, it's not just a developer for a piece of property. It's a developer for a floodplain, floodway property. So that's number one. Number two, it's a piece of property in the area where the comprehensive plan and the Olive Boulevard documents is also promoting or encouraging certain types of development, including international. So there's a lot of little boxes that cross together here that I think, if I were your attorney, I would say you're not getting that exact same approach from everyone, because there's a dynamic here of many different things that are in alignment with your comprehensive plan, your international district, et cetera, et cetera. And the fact that this is a one of the few that are around the area that is a actually completely in the floodplain. So I just wanted to make sure you...
I think we want to make clear too that, look, we're not turning you away. You know, we're likely tabling this. I don't know. I don't speak for the group, but we want to help you. I think, as others have said, we want to see this happen. So let's just uncover some more facts. And, you know, we want to encourage more people to apply for these funds. We're not trying to turn people away. We want to get these to use, right? And that's really the goal. So,
well, we understand, but to be honest with you, it's a mistake for us that we actually bought the deal already. So whatever happens, it's sunk cost for us. So if we have to continue make big investment to it, we have to really reevaluate our situation. Like the mistakes already made, do we still keep, you know, putting more money into it if we don't really get enough support from U City? As you know, we like our family's been here for more than a decade. So when it comes to investment, like I say, we always want to, you know, invest in U City, and then we can attract more investor retailers coming to Delma. I mean, coming to Delma or Olivet to see this place got more and more properties.
Thank you. Good. We'll go to you, Holly, next. Let's the attorney there. Is it Bill?
Yeah.
You got your fingers?
Yes. Yeah, sorry to be so cranky about this. I'm looking at the TIF districts, and this property is actually in RPA 3, but I don't recall anything in the package that references potential TIF funding for this.
TIF funding is not on the table for this project.
And to be clear, that was our first request, was for TIF funding. Our understanding is that the city is not interested in that at this time. So then, you know, that's why we're pursuing the real estate tax abatement, the sales tax exemption on the construction materials, and some of this funding, which when I looked at the guidelines, it certainly appeared to me that things like infrastructure and streetscape, which is that's part of what we're requesting, seem to be within the scope of those guidelines, especially on Olive. And so it's totally understood that the city wants to get a full picture of what's going on with those other incentives, but we would request that if once that happens, that as you're suggesting, that we be able to revisit this.
Yeah. Anybody else have anything?
Just one point from me, just so you all kind of know where I guess the disconnect is. So the report that we received from our consultant recommended an incentive package that totaled somewhere around $570,000. We extended an offer for $411,000, give or take, for the real property tax abatement and whatnot. And the idea was that to close the gap, which would be about 150,000, maybe give or take, they could come to EDRST for those funds. So you can see where, when we received the request for the 438, and then subsequently, I think I got the application first, and then Bill followed up with the letter with the counter offer that Gregory received. Both of those were received in the same day. So putting the packet together, that's where we got stuck as staff because we're like, wait, this is a bit above us. And then Gregory also recalled that some numbers were submitted, some updated numbers were submitted by Bill 2 days before we extended our initial offer. And those had not been run through the consultant because the consultant is going to charge us more money for that. The cost for that, I believe, was $5,000 or $7,000. Ivan paid $2,000. We covered the rest. So that's kind of why all of this is up in the air. That said, we received an application and a commitment to put it on this agenda, so here we are. So if that kind of helps you all understand a little bit more of why we are where we are as far as the city is concerned. But if we're going to schedule a special meeting, then certainly I will take both the police and this one back to Gregory and John Mulligan, and we can come up with a new plan, and then I'll reach out to all of you to schedule a special meeting sooner rather than later. I don't think there's a need for us to wait all the way to November. I think these both matters, specifically C-17, you know, Gregory's been very adamant about trying to support this project in some way. So I don't think there's a need to necessarily wait till mid-November. I think we can probably get something scheduled. It's subject to your availability, of course, but we can get something scheduled, hopefully sooner than that, so that we can give Ivan and the team an answer, so they know what they're working with, and then they can make some decisions.
Please keep going, Ivan. Please keep going. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, thank you. No, it was just no, I would just thank you. It's just a lot of work.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Well, we'll
And
revisit this soon and appreciate everybody's efforts thus far. But we'll put this right in line with the police issue before it we just faced and get back to it in a couple weeks.
I'm sorry, just one more comment. It is a development project, but this is an owner-occupied project. So, you know, this is a business that's looking to locate in uCity and basically a production facility. So, I just wanted to point that out, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and move you all back to panelists, I mean attendees. All righty.
I think the last thing, a new business item, facade improvement program. We got a tentative schedule.
And this does not require a vote. I forgot to take that off the agenda, but you all don't need to vote on the schedule. We're just letting you know that we're gearing up for another round of facade improvement apps.
What's the total amount that's going to be in there?
$150,000 is what's budgeted. Same amount that we've been budgeting for the last few years. Last year we were a little low. We approved $62,000 in funding. So we are hoping this time to obligate the full $150,000. But yes, $150,000.
Okay. Number seven, board member comments on the subcommittee meeting request. Did we do that earlier?
We didn't set the date, but so this would be Babette and Byron and Mayor Crow. You know, I think last time we did a Tuesday at like right at 5 or 5:30. Certainly open to something similar. We don't need to do a 6:30 if that works for you all. But just need to get a meeting on the books with me and Becky so we can start talking programming.
You know, due to the fact I know this has gone a little bit longer, and I know Brenda's got some small kids, can Brooke and Babette and Byron and I just come up with a date for the...
We sure can.
I mean, I think Byron's now retired. I'm not sure about Babette, but maybe we can find a time that works within everybody during the day. And then,
that would be phenomenal.
And that'll let everybody who's on this call go ahead and go on with their evening. And maybe, Brooke, we can just send out a couple of suggested dates tomorrow morning. You and I could just pop those out.
Sure, absolutely. We can do that.
Okay. And our next meeting is the 8th, January 8th, 6:30.
Oh, I think there'll be one before that, though.
There'll be one before that. And then
the next scheduled meeting, I guess.
Yes. And just so for the second item where I put proposed meeting dates, just to let you know, January and July of next year, we will have to push to the second week. January is New Year's Day. And then July, I think we decided last year that we will always push to the week after, because the first Thursday always falls around the 4th, obviously. So just a note on that.
Okay. Any other comments, anything we need to get to before we wrap up? All right. Anybody want to adjourn?
I move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right.
Thank you.
Good to see you all.
Good night, all. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.